Hey there. Today we have Louis Vasquez on our podcast. Rick is here too. Rick, say hi to everybody.
Hey guys,
All
happy
right,
Tuesday.
Louis. Yeah, here we are. So I want to tell you about Louis Vasquez. Louis is Tim and I, our personal tax and accounting firm, and they are a bunch of juggernauts. We've used them for a couple years now. Totally impressed. We have quarterly meetings. Louis has a lot of referrals and has helped me grow, our finances. So I appreciate Louis very much. And he's a perfect guest to have on our show today. Profit and Wealth Advisors is a highly experienced public taxation and accounting firm. And they have offices in New York, Los Angeles, and Orange County. They have a whole team of super smart people that work with them. And they specialize in small and medium businesses, real estate taxes, inheritances and trusts, and IRS government issues like audits, payment plans, and settlements. And Louie, thank you so much for being here today. And I'm going to give a little disclaimer that this is not anyone's tax or legal advice, and that we are just giving out information. I wouldn't say it was for your entertainment, but anything having to do with your own personal life, you should seek the professionals to help you. And we're just here providing information today. Okay?
Thanks for having
Capiche?
me,
That's what
Megan.
they say, Becky. You bet. All right, Louie. So we're gonna dive right into this, okay? So today we are talking to investors, people that own property that they don't live in, that they rent out. So the first thing, I have wrote all these down because I wanted to make good use of our time here. The depreciation and holding strategy. So, do you have any advice on how long it is typically, how much of a good idea is it to hold investment property for a really long time, to maximize the depreciation write-offs? What's your opinion on these things?
Yeah, it's a great question. Great question. So there's two types of depreciation kind of timelines when it comes to investment properties. One would be a residential real estate, some sort of multifamily, single family property. You typically have a timeline, and I tend to round up and down. So you typically, though, for the most part, you have 27 years to write off a residential real estate property. And then commercial would be the other side, commercial office building, manufacturing area, industrial property. That you get the depreciation schedule is a little bit longer. It's actually 39 years. So residential, 27, 27.5 if we're going to get technical. And then commercial is 39 years. So if you don't do anything, you get that by definition. And really, depreciation, what is depreciation? Depreciation is a fancy way for investments of being able to write off the building over time. So when you acquire a real estate asset, there's two aspects that get looked at. How much is the value of the land and what is the value of the actual building? So just round numbers, if I buy something for $2 million, say I buy something for $2 million in Orange County, Los Angeles County area. We divide that into the value of the land. So let's say 25% of that $2 million is allocated to land. You can't depreciate land for whatever reason. But the building aspect, the other 75% of that $2 million acquisition, that building is what we can then take and depreciate or write off over whatever time frame, depending on what type of asset it is. And it's really just a calculated, it's not a real deduction. You know, when I think of a real deduction as an investor business owner, I think of money I'm spending for the most part. I'm exchanging cash and getting a deduction. Depreciation is a calculated deduction. Us accountants get our Excel spreadsheets out and our calculators, and we're calculating that deduction that you're able to take year over year on your tax filing. And you know, surprisingly, Megan and Rick, the amount of times that I have seen depreciation completely omitted, that's one of the most common
Wow.
amendments that we
Wow.
do when we
That's a
see
big omit.
yeah, it's one of the most common amendments that we'll do is rental property out there, and depreciation just from another accountant that just doesn't quite know, because it is a little bit technical and nuanced, not calculated. So then we would clean that up in an amendment. So you get it. It's basically allowing you to write off the purchase, the value of that purchase price building over a set amount of time. So if you wanted to get really strategic in it, and you can do it, there's something called cost segregation studies. And what that cost segregation study is you get an accounting firm, an engineering firm that knows how to do cost segregation studies. Our firm doesn't do it. I don't want to get involved in that just yet. So you bring in a cost segregation accounting firm, engineering firm, and they dissect the building, to the walls, the ceilings, the doorknobs, the electrical, the HVAC. They do an analysis of the building, and it really, really accelerates. You're able to really get a huge deduction on your depreciation in 1 year. So instead of spreading it out over, let's say, 27 years, you get the vast majority of it in 1 year that you choose to apply it. It typically comes out to equal the down payment. So the down payment for the asset. So let's say I'm trying to buy an asset for $1.5 million or so, just whatever number you want to throw out. Typically, you have to put down 20%. It pretty much gets it to the point where your down payment is pretty much deductible on your tax filing. So you get this huge deduction now on your tax filing that then potentially, if we can claim real estate status, or if it's involved with a business that you're running, there's some strict rules on when you can and can't do it. But you can then get a huge deduction on your tax filing for the depreciation through the cost segregation study, and that would very likely have rather significant impacts for you. So there's depreciation. Make sure your accountant, if you're an investor and you got a, I would go to my accountant tonight and say,
Yeah.
hey, how much are we depreciating? Just to make sure that it's being claimed,
I have
and
a
then if that
question.
number you don't understand, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, sorry. Because I know when you get on a roll, I have to jump in real quick. Okay.
No
So,
problem, no problem.
all right. So why, what would be the motivation for somebody to take all that depreciation up front? So, kind of expedite things. What would be the motivation for that? Because when you sell, then like you'd have to pay it back, or if you take it all up front, then you can't spread it out over the years. I mean, is it because they need write-offs immediately kind of a thing?
Yeah, it's typically why you're doing that is purely for cash. So if I'm having a really good year, let's say we're making $500,000 or so, if I'm making $500,000, a good majority of that $500,000 I make in that year is being taxed. If you're in California, New York, a high cost of living state, a high tax state, if I make like a $500,000, the vast majority of that is being taxed at 40, 45%. So you could go out, buy a property, do a cost segregation study. Now I have a huge deduction offsetting those 45% tax brackets. So instead of giving my money to the government, I'm essentially using cost segregation, depreciation, my tax brackets. I'm going to give the money to somebody. So instead of giving the money to the government, that down payment that I'm instead going to take and acquire some sort of real estate asset, I'm going to get that down payment deductible instead of just giving that equivalent of a down payment to the government, just completely being out of pocket on it. So it's purely for a tax avoidance strategy. And then on the back end, you are correct. The depreciation gets added back if you sell down the line, but that's when you would explore like a 1031 exchange or et cetera,
Yeah,
et
keep
cetera.
rolling it down.
I'm a firm believer in never selling real estate.
Me
You
too.
buy real estate to hold that. Hopefully you can pass that down to your family. And I would go into buying real estate for the long-term generational hold. But that's essentially in the grand scheme of when
Yeah, I like that.
and right now we're going through right now we're going through a year-end planning with a lot of our clients right now. And I there's probably four or five people right now, either closed escrow or looking to close escrow, in escrow, trying to buy something just to just essentially to get a cost segregation study done and get that big deduction. So it really turns into, it really turns into a situation where I may not be cash flowing on the property, I may be breaking even. I might even be out of pocket on the asset that I'm acquiring, but where I'm actually going to be making money is I'm making money on the tax side of things.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah.
yeah.
I like it. Oof. Now everybody can see why I called Louis and his team a bunch of juggernauts.
Yeah,
Okay, that's
geez.
a good
A
strategy.
lot going
All
on.
right, now there's a lot of people, Louis, that are out there that are they want to become a real estate investor, they want to become a flipper, and people don't realize you have to set yourself up to be in that position, that you can't just be buying and flipping properties without having like an entity, right? Otherwise, you're going to have to pay short-term capital gains and that sort of thing. I mean, what's the deal with that? Flippers.
Flippers. There's a lot of information out there. I cringe at some of the stuff that I hear when I'm
Yeah.
flipping through Facebook or YouTube. The entity side of things is definitely where a lot of the action's at. Having yourself set up, is definitely a situ is definitely what you want to do. It's just a matter of making sure you're getting it amazes me within real estate specifically. Real estate, we deal with a lot of real estate people. I love the realtor who knows all about all of this stuff and goes out and makes $250,000 and then goes out and buys $100,000 car, so that way I can flash off and write off the car. But so they're spending money every way possible, but when it comes down to their finances, their taxes, their legal, they're using ChatGPT, So
Whoa, bad news. Yeah.
if I'm going into flipping, and in order to do that, you have to have some degree of cash or access to cash. Definitely spend some of that money on an accountant that understands real estate. So that way, it's something I would ask, what are some of the other clients that you're dealing with real estate? Is there any examples of a real estate strategy that's similar to mine's that you can show? Just because you're a CPA and a real estate agent and accountant doesn't necessarily mean you know a lot, doesn't necessarily mean you know a lot about real estate,
Bingo.
So can we find it? Can you show me some examples of real estate? Can you tell me a little bit about it? Show me how you're using entity structuring. So there's a lot of action. There's a lot of action in the entity structuring, but you can also really, really mess up if you don't if you don't know what you're doing, or if you're with somebody that doesn't know what they're doing.
Amen. Exactly. Just like when you go to an attorney for a divorce, and you go to an attorney that specializes in business law, like what are you doing? You gotta go to the right people,
People
okay,
come to us
so
about crypto. People come to us about crypto. I don't know enough about crypto to be confident.
yeah,
Like I would, we'll
yeah.
say, hey, why don't you go find an accountant that really knows crypto? Bigger businesses, publicly traded businesses. Yeah, I understand how financials work, cash flow. I can tell you how to make things better, but I don't know how to do, I don't get involved in publicly traded companies, So,
Yeah.
it's a matter of just being with people who know what they're doing.
Yeah, you got to stay in your lane as a professional,
Definitely.
okay. Yeah, so I'm sorry I threw that question at you. It wasn't in
Great
my
question, though.
questions.
Great question. Great
Thank you.
question.
okay. Repairs, improvements, and write-offs. This is for investment property. Can
Yeah.
you tell us, like, what's the difference between a full write-off repair and a capitalized improvement?
Yeah, so there's actually been a lot of changes to this with the one big beautiful bill that got passed in July. And if you were to go to our website, I'm sure Megan and Rick will share. We have a video section that will take us to our YouTube page. And on our YouTube page, I have a seminar on a lot of the changes. So this has
Okay.
changed quite a bit more for the commercial owners, and I'll get into that in a second. But Really, it comes down to when I'm spending money on a type of repair, improvement, etc. Is the expense in relation to repairing a problem, or am I spending money to improve the overall asset? That's what they really look at. So am I spending money to fix the bathroom, the toilet, the sinks, the shower? Am I spending money because I have to fix aspects of this because they need repairs? Or am I actually completely remodeling the bathroom? What's your intent behind the expense? Am I spending money to patch up some paints that need to get repainted? Or am I actually painting my whole asset so that way it just overall looks more aesthetically pleasing? Okay. Am I spending money on fixing the pool because there's some pool issues? Or am I actually expanding the pool to put a jacuzzi next to the pool? So the intent behind the money that you're exchanging matters. Why does this matter? Let's say I spend $2,500 in repairs to actually fix the bathroom. I can write off that $2,500 100% the same year I spend it. Okay. So I spend $2,500. I take a deduction for $2,500. But if I'm spending $5,000 to improve the bathroom, that $5,000, you don't get a deduction on that same year you spend it. That deduction will get spread out over 5, 7, 15, 27 years. So, just like a great example is, let's just look at pools. I really like pools and jacuzzis. So, if I'm actually putting in a jacuzzi next to my pool and I'm spending $50,000 or so, I don't get a deduction that same year that I spend the $50,000. Okay. Instead, you would have to spread out that $50,000 over, let's just say, 20 years. So I would get that $50,000 divided by 20. I would get a $5,000 deduction year over year. So that's essentially what you could potentially run into if you get into an audit is, prove to us that this expense was actually a repair. We believe it was an improvement. And then that could potentially change how your tax filing was done. On our end, at our firm, pretty much $5,000 is when we will question you. So anything that's below $5,000, we're pretty much chopping that up to a legitimate expense. So $5,000 to fix the garage door, we're gonna just take it. But over $5,000, that's when we're gonna start questioning you on what that. You know, if we see a $10,000 expense, we're going to start questioning that $10,000.
So, Louis, thank you for that. I have a question if you guys don't mind. So I'm clear on
Yeah.
this, because it's a good point, by the way. I think a lot of people get confused about this, right? So, as I'm hearing you, if I hear you correctly, Louis, if someone has it's a repair versus an improvement, that's really the
Correct.
deciding factor, correct? So, in other words, in your
Right.
example, if you're going to, add something to your pool or going to re-plaster your pool, that's an improvement, not a
Right,
repair. And
right, right.
so, an improvement is amortized or depreciated over a longer period of time than would be a repair.
Correct,
Correct? So what
exactly.
if you had a major repair to the house that was over five or ten or $15,000, and then it's a legitimate repair, right? Would that still be depreciated that same calendar year, or would that be spread over 5 or 10 or 15 years?
The accessibility of research is really well. So if we see anything that's over, we'll question anything over $5,000. We'd get the investor's response, the business owner's response, and then we would look for court cases. We would look for court cases where there was some sort of contesting in that. It's made its way to a court case, potentially a private letter ruling. And once we find something that's similar enough, we'll let you know. You know, based off of this $15,000 that you're telling us is an expense that we believe is an expense, well, this actually made its way to court. This is how it was handled, and this is the we'll want to follow this.
Is that a trigger for the IRS in terms of audits, looking for those in audits?
For rental properties, definitely. It sticks out when on that re the line item. There's a direct line item on the tax filing for repairs. So big numbers in repairs, it just sticks out. That's when you could potentially
Gotcha.
question if this was
Okay.
indeed an improvement. Now, I do want to get into the big beautiful bill real fast on the commercial side of things. As we all know, commercial real estate is a little bit more of a of the government's decided that that industry needs some assistance. So pretty much what the Big Beautiful Bill did is any type of interior improvement, anything that is needed interior wise. So we're talking HVAC, we're talking electrical, anything interior, you actually can write that off 100% the same year you spend the money on it.
Regardless of
So
about the dollar amount.
regardless of the dollar amount, regardless of the dollar
On
amount.
commercial
So
properties or not residential.
commercial properties, not residential. Right. So on the commercial side of things, they did make an adjustment where you don't necessarily have to decipher if it's a repair or improvement. It's just really the inside is what they're looking for. There is one, like elevators, they didn't like elevators. So even if it's an inside elevator, you can't deal with the elevators. But you know, these main infrastructure aspects of HVAC, lighting,
Okay, gotcha.
electrical, you
Yeah.
can invest, you know, $100,000 into that, take that deduction 100% the same year, and that could potentially have dramatic impacts for you on your tax filing.
Interesting. Perfect. Thank
Yeah,
you.
very interesting. Very interesting.
That is interesting. Now let's talk about when someone does sell their investment property and they do a 1031 exchange. We, know the rules about 1031 exchange, and we do quite a bit of them every year. So, that's a whole separate discussion. But I want to talk about when someone sells their investment property, whether they're doing an exchange or not, what costs are a write-off as part of the sale? Like, escrow fees, title fees, realtor commissions, that sort of thing. What can they write off?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I ever told you, Megan, but I've actually handled the 1031 audit and
Wow.
got a no change, a very rare no change decision. So we successfully defended the 1031 exchange through and through. So when I'm selling an investment property, it's the biggest misconception is you're taxed on the appreciation of the asset. They don't care about the financing or the equity. They don't care about that. You're taxed on the appreciation. So if I bought a property 20 years ago for 250 grand and today it's worth $5 million, okay, they care about what you bought it for versus what you're selling it for. That's the two main components that are offsetting each other. So if I bought it for $250,000 and it's fully paid off, that's great that it's paid off. That's great that it's paid off. They don't care though about the equity. So you take the sales price minus the original purchase price. Those are the two numbers that offset each other. And then after that, the vast majority of the closing cost. So you look at an escrow statement, that closing cost statement, the vast majority of those expenses, you know, realtor fees, escrow fees, inspection fees, this fee, that fee, those are all considered closing costs and would be deductible. For us realtors that are listening to them, I don't know how many times I've seen a small capital gain that I tell the investor, hey, you know, if you would have just paid your realtor like 1% more, you know, this wouldn't even be here. And
Yeah.
they would much rather pay their realtor
And the
1% more
government.
than pay the
Yeah, the
government.
IRS.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly,
Right.
exactly.
And then the
100%.
realtor has to pay, taxes on their income. But yeah, it's like sometimes I see realtors slicing and dicing their commission on investment properties where people are making hundreds of thousands of dollars. Like, didn't you explain to your client that they're going to be paying taxes, so you might as well get paid? I mean, what kind of a negotiator are you,
Yeah,
Oh,
exactly.
no negotiation.
Yeah. So race to the bottom with that crew.
Yeah, that's no kidding.
So
But
the
okay.
vast majority of those closing costs are indeed 100% deductible. There is some nuances in an aspect called depreciation recapture. We can get into that another time. But the main thing is taking the sales price minus the original purchase price minus the closing costs, and that's going to give you a good ballpark of where your gain is. Specifically for investment properties, the calculation for residential properties is a little bit different, but yeah, so.
The same thing. Okay, now let's talk about legacy planning, estate planning. So, we'll use Tim and I as an example. Let's say Tim and I own a property, it's worth $1 million. It's an investment property. We paid 80,000 for it. We sell it now, we have to pay a huge capital gain. But if we die and leave it to our kids, what happens
Yeah.
to that?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. If we could just do a quick run back on the 1031 exchange real fast, is that okay, Megan?
Sure. Yeah, sure.
Okay. So I've gone through, like I said, I've gone through a national 1031 audit, so I've seen what the IRS is looking for. If you have a reputable exchange company, they're pretty much quarterbacking the majority of that. They're making sure you're hitting your due dates. The 1031 exchange is set up to fail, in my opinion. I hate the way it's structured, but it is what it is. But that exchange company is quarterbacking it all, and they're keeping track of everything. They have the documentation. So in the audit, it's really easy to find that exchange company, take their paperwork, and give it to the auditor. That was so easy. And they're just like, oh shit, yeah, if we've heard of them. And that's pretty much it. That was the oversight of the 90 days to identify, the 180 days to close, was once they saw that there was an exchange company involved that was reputable, they didn't ask me any more questions about that.
Oh,
Okay.
wow.
What they're
Wow.
following is the money. They're really
Yeah.
looking at what happens to the money. So neither the investor or the related party can touch the money through it. So they're really looking to make sure that the investor or related party, so you know, as the accountant, I can't hold your money. So when the money goes into escrow, they're looking to see is the escrow company related to the investor. That was the biggest thing that they were looking for. And then your accountant can't touch the money, your lawyer can't touch the money. Your lawyer can say, hey, I can quarterback this whole exchange for you, charge you a couple grand. And that but that, now you have a related party involved. So that's really what they were looking for, is was any related parties involved through the course of the cash. So just quick thing is make sure you have a reputable inter exchange company kind of quarterbacking it. I can't get into your legacy planning now. Okay, so legacy planning is one of my favorite parts of all of this. I really enjoy the estate trust aspects of taxation. It's the only part that really excites me. So right now, if Megan and her husband Tim, Rick, do you have a spouse?
Yes.
Okay, Rick and his spouse, me and my wife, regardless, I have a daughter. I'm sure all of us here have kids. So once we, as the parents, go to the next life, assuming there's a half, just assuming that the structure is there, just assuming that. The property gets what's called a step up in basis.
When
So
you
it's a
say
fancy.
structure, you mean a trust, right?
No, not so much a trust. Not so much a trust.
Oh, I didn't know what you
Trust.
meant.
A trust could actually destroy all of this, actually. But
Oh my gosh.
just assuming we're just normal people. Okay, just normal, normal, normal. Assuming we're not like ultra ultra wealthy. Ultra,
Right.
the more wealth you incur, the more trust get involved and things change. But just assuming you're an average person, you know, I have an asset today. It's worth $5 million. I bought it 25 years ago for 250 grand. I have a sizable gain. I have a sizable gain there. So if we pass the next life today, that property value, it's worth $5 million today. I passed away today. I bought it 25 years ago for 250 grand. Well, because I've passed away and my kids inherit it, so I have to inherit it, okay? When my kids inherit it, the $250,000 that I bought it for 25 years ago is no longer relevant. What is now relevant is the fact that it's worth $5 million today and the kids are inheriting it for $5 million. So if they were to sell it today, tomorrow, for $5 million, I would have no gain because the property gets a step up in its value to the value at the date of death. So, the biggest thing that I see, that where people are shooting themselves in the foot is mom and dad. Once mom and dad have passed away and we're starting to get access to everything, we're finding out that mom and dad 15 years ago, 10 years ago, they added me to the title. Okay.
Oh, not good.
Yeah. Yeah, not good, because now I'm not inheriting this. I was on title 15 years ago. So now I'm in a situation where I don't get that almighty step up in basis because there's no real inheritance. It's just instead of owning 50% of it, now I own 100% of it because I'm already on title. Where if it, the worst thing you can do, they did that so that way once they passed away, my kid gets direct access to it, doesn't have to go through probate. That's what I see the biggest problem in all of that is we come to find out that they've been on title for a while. And what was supposed to be a step up in basis, which would basically eliminate, minimize the capital gain. Now we have a serious capital gain.
Oof, that was like
Yeah.
good intentions gone
Good
wrong, right?
intention.
Oh, that's terrible. That would be
That could be like a
terrible.
reality show.
No kidding. So that was like, that brings me to my last question, which was, in your professional opinion, what's the single biggest mistake you see with real estate investors, especially new ones or those who are self-employed with business write-offs that could jeopardize, their tax write-offs. But I mean, that's a pretty big mistake, what you said right there. Are there any other big common mistakes that you see consistently that
Yeah,
are stand out?
I would say not really like not really I would say not really foreseeing the future when you're trying to do something, not really kind of having some foresight in. So what I mean by that is I have a year where I'm making money and I want to write it all off. I want write off here, I want write off there. So that all sounds good and dandy. I call it the apples and the oranges approach. Apples approach and oranges approach. So that approach there is what I would call an apple. So I made money. I'm spending money, getting deductions everywhere I can. So the pro is that I'm showing very little taxable income. So the pro is very little income, very little tax because I'm not showing a whole lot of tax. Okay. The con though is I look horrible on that tax file. It looks like I didn't make any money. If an investor sees it, if the banks see it, they're going to say, you're not qualified for anything. Yeah, you made $250,000, but you wrote it all off. Your tax filing says that you made nothing. We can't finance nothing. So now, because we're not foreseeing the fact that I will eventually very likely need to leverage this tax filing for some degree of financing, I call taxes the cost you pay to stay in business. Okay.
Amen. Yeah, exactly.
So
For sure.
that's an Apple approach. Aggressive with the write-offs, little taxable income, little taxes. But the con is that is for that year, and for a lot of times to qualify for a loan, they're looking at the last 3 years, you look shitty. Okay. Compared to an orange approach where it's kind of a balance. I want to show income. I'm fine paying tax. I'm fine paying tax. So not as much in expenses, still showing good AGI, still showing good income on the tax filing. Yes, you're going to pay some tax. Biggest misconception is the rich, the wealthy, the Trump people, they don't pay any tax. That's a farce. It's a farce. If you're making money, you're paying tax. So orange, paying some tax, but now I look really good on paper. Now, I'm paying $50,000 in taxes, but now the bank wants to lend me $250,000. Okay, there you go. So I don't know how many times where they're coming to us and trying to get set up for a loan, and we're getting it situated, and then they come back to me and they say, I didn't get qualified for the loan. And it's like, okay, well, the last accountant that you can't that you're coming to us from, has been writing everything off. Of course you're not qualifying for a loan. So now we have to amend. Now you're paying for amendment fees, penalties start being in.
Time.
Yes, it's a so just not really not really it should typically be a good balance. I want to show good income. I pay it, accept the fact that you're going to pay tax, accept it. It's just, it is what it is. Being able to use that filing to leverage more income or more debt with the banks and investment, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep, we call that you can't have your cake and eat it too, even though I'm saying that now and it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. But yeah, you can't write everything off and qualify for a loan. There's a strategy that you have to really employ if you want to leverage yourself, you know?
Gotta look good on paper,
Yeah.
gotta look good on
Well,
paper.
Louis, this has been amazing and so informational. And I appreciate your time and your expertise. And this is just like, I know this is just a tiny fraction of all the stuff that's going on at your office all the time. So we're going to be sure to put your info on there so if
Yeah,
people need
sure.
to reach out, they
Great
can. And I
resource for sure.
appreciate, yeah, great resource. And Louis's got great resources. He's like
Yeah,
the
really
me
connected.
of his world. He's got really great resources. So thanks, Louis, so much.
Awesome. Cool, Louis. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, fun stuff, guys. Happy holidays. You
Happy
too. Thank
holidays. Merry
you. Merry
Christmas.
Christmas.
Happy Hanukkah. And we'll talk to you soon.
See ya.
Right.